and vitamins. Irons in the niacin, out of the loop, fire fit. Rappers sit back, I'm about to begin. Bout foul talking squall. Never even walked the wall. More or less destined to get tested. Never been arrested. My album will manifest many things that I saw, did, or heard about. Or told firsthand. Never word of mouth. What's in the future for the fusion and the change? Your rappers are in danger. Who will use wits to be a remainder? When the missile is aimed to blow you out of the frame. Some will keep their limbs in, some will be maimed. The same suckers with the gab about. Killer instincts return. And when you sniff down where they lack in this division, the plan is soa. Cracking your head with a 4x4. Realize, sucker, I'll be the coming like Noah. Always simmer you down. Perpetrating facade in what you consider an image. To me, this is just a scrimmage. I feel I'm stoned. Not cause of Papa where my cat cocked. The more emotion I put into it, the harder I rock. Those who pose lyrical, but really ain't true, I feel.
Good morning, everyone. Time is on. You know what time it is. It's Community Watch and Comment. This is Dr. Hate in the studios at WPFW 89.3 FM. And we got with us Dr. Ball and the All-Star Squad, the Balls. We got, who we got on the, who we have here? Let's hear who we have in the studio with us, please.
Well, today we have Micey Danny the Ball, which is super awesome.
Super awesome. Everything is awesome.
Super awesome. Mm-hmm.
And who else?
And
go ahead and introduce your sister for us. Introduce your sister for us.
We also have Marley Solon Ball, which is super awesome. She's super awesome, like me. She's my sister, best friend.
That's what's up. That's wonderful.
That's what's up.
And as we come to you on Fridays between 11 and 12, we like to bring your stories, your comments, what's moving you this week. And we also want to continue with our guest from this morning, Dr. Joy James, professor of political science and philosophy, African and African-American studies, and a critical race theorist and feminist who writes about imprisoned intellectuals in the black world. And what's happening right now is this conversation on the imprisoned intellectuals in academia.
Can I quickly interject something here? Because I was looking something up. I've been going back and reading George Jackson for this video mixtape, and it was a clip that I found or came back to that I know you answer this question all the time about why Dr. Hate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to speak for you, but this speaks for me why I consider myself a hater. Mm-hmm. And George Jackson wrote in April of 1970 in Soledad, Brother, he said, and I dig people, righteous people. I've always found it hard to really hate anyone. I loved people. I understood from the beginning that the end purpose of life was simply to live, experience, contribute, connect, to gratify the body and mind. I began to hate when I discovered that the mystification was interjected intentionally. I can't say where it started. I can't trace it, but I believe it goes back to my earliest years and so on and so on. But that's how I feel, that I have always found it hard to hate anyone. I love people. But when I found that they were doing dirt and that things were doing being done intentionally, intentionally to negatively impact so many of us, that's where my hate for all that is deserving of it came into being. So anyway, I also try to emulate George.
And we have an all-star crew of callers who are going to call in. Tesfa, I'm already expecting you to call in and talk about Barack Obama's visit to Ethiopia.
Oh, I know he's on the line.
Tesfa, if you're not on that line already, please tell me what you think about this Barack Obama touching the actual bones of Dinkanesh, this necrophilic response.
Did he really? I missed that.
He touched the bones. They removed the case. It was the actual bones. They never set out the actual bones in the actual museum where her exhibit is.
Wow.
So call in 202-588-0893. You know, and they played it, you know, this is your Kenyan side touching these bones, but it was like the Kenyan president of the United States just so many things wrong there. But 202-588-0893. If you've been listening to the shows this morning or WPFW at all this week, you know there's a lot happening, good conversations. Let us know what's going on in your world. So Dr. James, let's continue with this idea of the imprisoned intellectual, and as we get calls, we'll filter them in. They may want to ask you something directly about what you said, and you can help us think out loud for a little bit. Or, as some like to say, you can help us hate out loud, you know, and we could figure things out collectively.
You know, I think in terms of hate, I think that people, and you've said it yourself, the people who have the greatest love and expectations of what life would be are the ones who are probably most enraged at the duplicity and the deceit and the corruption of it. And so, you know, it's probably on the same coin. You know, one side hate, one side love. But, you know, you desire, I heard your children's voices. I know what you desire. And so that makes you great people who love. Mm. And hate is the biofuel.
Hate is a biofuel.
Mm.
That's and we're not selling that either. We're not marketing it. It's not going to be corporatized. We got some callers on the line. Let us know who's on the line. Who we got this morning?
Good morning. This is William.
William, good morning.
Love your show, of course. I always listen to the power of it between 10 and 12 p.m. on Friday. The president, I really don't appreciate, as I have watched him closely over the years, this mask that he keeps wearing, where he says one thing when he's around people of color, and then he says another when he's around white America. And that's why he doesn't really get into solving the problem of racism and white supremacy that he has the power to solve. And it just really sickens me. I consider him a coward, and it's not just him. You can turn on the TV at any time and see dark faces who are too cowardly to talk about the real problem and the real issue, and that's why it doesn't go away. But I'd rather he did not touch those bones. You are not deserving, because you are not the activist and the revolutionary that those bones represent.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Dr. James, any response to that?
I think in general, the way our culture works, the way Western, the world's culture, like Frank would argue, it's very hard to understand sacred and black or sacred and African in the same context for most people who are indoctrinated in a racist culture. So the president's like every other American. And so understanding boundaries and respect for black life is going to be a challenge. And that's an unfortunate example. I was going to add something else, but I don't think there's anything else. It's an indignity, obviously. And so it's just another illustration of what we face.
All right. Thank you very much. We got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. What's your comment, question? What's the story of the week?
Hotep, my brother.
Hotep.
Assalamu alaikum, OCO, and shalom to everyone.
Salam.
First of all, I'd like to set the record straight. The last time I talked, I hastily gave the name Khufu for the first unifier of up in Lower Egypt, when in fact it's Menephis.
I didn't want to say nothing now, but Marin Jehudi was looking at you like, Jehudi, you not on your scribe game. What's up?
You know how you don't give us much time, and I was hastily speaking, but it's Menephis or Menes, the founder of Memphis, the first dynastic capital city in ancient Kemet.
That's what we call an aha moment right there.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's where integration with the Asians and white was legally allowed, which eventually led to the downfall of black power in ancient Egypt. The same exact thing has happened in America. Well, you know, when the Anasazi or the Mound Builders were not extraterrestrials like a lot of people think, but a combination of ancient black African people, one group called Z or Olmecs from Mali, West Africa, and the others known as the Mbuti, San, Twa, and Anu pre-dynastic Egyptian and Nubian people from the Nile Valley. And when they allowed the yellow Asian Mongols to settle and integrate in, they later betrayed our hospitality and began to overwhelm us, massacre us, and steal lands and rape our women and claim the land for themselves. Now, the so-called Native American Red Indian, in a secret coalition with Spanish conquistadors, assisted by black Moors, betrayed and destroyed Montezuma, the black and the black Aztecs, the last vestige of black power in the Western Hemisphere, which paid away for completed European dominance and enslavement of indigenous black Americans and later black captives from Africa.
All right, Baba Tahuti, let's cap it there, and thank you very much, and hopefully you will have enough time for you next time, but there is never enough time for the esteemed elder, Baba Tahuti. We're going to take a few more callers and get Dr. James right back into the conversation and this discussion around the responsibility of intellectuals in the academic environments. Caller, you're on the air. What's your comment, a question, story of the week? What you think about?
Good morning, my brother.
There it is. Good morning, my brother.
Thank you. Good morning, my sister. I want to say to President Obama, your father's country, Kenya, got independent through a very vicious war, and that war was made possible by support from Ethiopia. My brother, President Obama, you went to Ethiopia and endorsed a genocidal government, and I was saddened by what you said. Ethiopia is suffering for so long because Ethiopia helped get independence in South Africa, in Zimbabwe, in many other countries, because it was the only independent country other than Liberia. And Ethiopia carried her responsibility of helping her other brothers and sisters in other countries. And for that, white supremacists hated Ethiopia and imposed the current divisive genocidal government. And you went ahead and supported that government. President Obama, you worked against your own history. You worked against your own father. You made a mistake. Admit it. And please make things straight. That's what I want to say. And I love African Americans because I live here. I have seen their suffering. And I'm one with them. But I will always remain Ethiopian. But that won't blind me to see what African Americans go through. We should all be for justice.
Thank you very much. That's Baba Tesfa. Let's get to the next call, and we'll come right back on with Dr. James. Caller, you're on the air. What's happening? What's your comment or question? Caller, we got you on the air. And if you turn that radio down, you will hear me talking directly to you. Thank you very much. All right, caller, you're still on the air?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, sir.
What's happening? What's your comment or question?
Yeah, turn down your radio, though.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to challenge you. I have 2 points to make, okay? Number one, I'd like to challenge you because I called you last time, but you didn't answer my question. I want you to admit, and I want you to say this straight, okay, that we are at war. This police brutality is for real. So our sister's been killed, 3 sisters been killed in jail. God knows what happened in there. But you said we are not at war. So I want you to believe that we are at war. Our people are dying, okay? Number two, about Mr. Obama, okay? When last time when Mr. Obama gave a speech in Congress, somebody called him a liar. And I was so mad about that. But let me tell you something, sadly. Mr. Obama proved saying that Ethiopian government is elected by the people democratically. I'm ashamed of him. I love him. I respect him. I vote for him. But I tell you what, I'm hurt. He lied. He lied in front of the world. Thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate you so much. God bless.
Now, I heard a challenge. Mm-hmm. That was a challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think if, I don't know who would say that we're not at war, but if we said we're not at war, maybe we're not at war. Maybe we actually haven't declared that there are two sides opposing each other, fighting for a political goal.
That
maybe
was
a
the
geographical
point.
Space.
That was the point you were making. I think I got lost.
Yeah. But the you know, in that discussion, if the other side doesn't recognize that it constitutes an actual group and is under attack by another group that is defined by its own parameters, then that side that's being attacked doesn't even know what's happening to it. So we are in a situation, especially in this country, but around the globe, where we don't recognize what the parameters of African people are. And I'm hoping that we get some callers describing a new way to think about this thing, that there is a new way to associate who these African people are and what the attack is. But I thank you very much for that. So, Dr. James, You gave us the 60-second answer about the mythology of the talented 10th and Du Bois retracting his statements and the discussion about what is the responsibility of the black intellectual in academe. But you also wrote this amazing piece on radicalized subjects, and I want you to talk about how black folks who find themselves wanting to be more activist-based in their work need to move. What are they searching for? And that'll lead us to your larger work of the beloved communities.
Okay, that, well, obviously that's a tough one because I'm in it. And I know you're talking about the article, Radicalized Subjects, that was, it's a co-authored article, right?
Yes.
Right, okay. So that was written years ago, and actually my co-author and I, we disagree. I mean, he's gone on and he's the head of one of the largest African-American academic units in the country. And I don't head anything, you know. So my position was to argue that if so much about the academy is visibility, either through your text or through your performance in the classroom or, you know, as dean or head of school or at the conference, you know, podium, then to understand that there's a point that you enter the stage, and then there's a point when you exit it. And when you exit it, you do another kind of work. But if you think that the work only happens while you're on stage, then there's no way that that constitutes a sustained liberatory effort. You know, let me try to explain it. I see the academy, I've been in it over 20 years. I've taught in pretty particular areas, only as Research 1 or Ivy, right? And that's like rarefied air, right? I don't come from an elite background. I come from a military family. I was raised by a mother who grew up as a sharecropper in Mississippi. I didn't grow up speaking what is called standard English. So I always saw myself by class, by color, dark skin, by race, African-American, by gender, female, by ideology, from, you know, military, Christian, Catholic, to moving increasingly towards the left, into radicalism as an outsider. So the way I see it is, even if I'm inside it, I see it almost like I'm on the outside looking in. And I've always been interested in finding the exit doors on the stage. I've also seen some faculty who are very comfortable to get on stage and stay there, and who would argue that there's no need to exit in order to do another form of work that has not only equal value but greater value, because there's no audience per se that you're trying to woo or maintain. There's only the pursuit of a certain kind of thinking that opens doors to new paths. So I don't know if that was too abstract, but I was trying to speak to that article and my mindset when I was co-authoring it.
No, that's extremely helpful, because many of us find ourselves in these positions wanting to do more, but recognizing that this is a space that allows us to say certain things, and these things are just blowing in the wind. They have no impact on the people that we actually want to reach. But that
and there's another, if I can, there's please. Also a punitive aspect to the academy. I mean, you, at times you want to say things, and then you feel that somebody's listening, and what you say will be reported, right? I mean, Frank talked a little bit about that in explaining his classroom situation. I know that I've been called in by department chairs, I've been called in by presidents once to say that whatever I do and teach about is okay as long as I keep it in the classroom. And I was kind of perplexed because the way I think about it is movement errors. Like at the time there wasn't the Black Lives Matter, there were, you know, there was in Ferguson, there was in Baltimore, it was just, you know, pretty level, right? And I was a little bit puzzled, like what are you, you know, what would I be doing? What do you think? But also insulted. Why are you calling me into your office to give me this caution, right? But going back to Foucault, and I'm not a real fan of his, even though I know there's this work coming out that say he had a more complicated stance on race, but Going back to the panopticon, or to be under constant surveillance, I think part of the being in the academy is to be under a form of surveillance. Now, is it the same surveillance as being at Rikers? Absolutely not. But it's a form of surveillance that over time academics internalize so that they self-police, right? And there's also been this change in the academy over the years with these community engagement programs that have sprung up, you know, Vanderbilt, UT Austin, Williams College, where I teach, where money is going in to train students to be activists without a critique that they're being trained to be activists by people who are not activists. You know, they're being trained by staff, employed by corporate, or, you know, it's either a private corporation if it's an, you know, private school, or it's a state corporation if it's a public school. So they're being trained by corporate employees on how to wage social justice, but in a way that will be acceptable to their employers.
Dr. James, let's hold on that note and take some more calls and come right back to that note. Thank you very much. This is Dr. Haight. You're on with Community Watch and Comment, 89.3 FM, WPFW. And we want to take some calls and hear what you're thinking about. If you're listening to the conversation, it's a serious conversation with Dr. Joy James. Dr. Ball's in the building, Red Eagle on the boards. But who do we have on the line with us?
This is Miss Antoinette from D.C.
Yes.
My comments for the week is I'm very proud of my daughter and my granddaughter. But what I wanted to ask, I missed some of the first segment. And when I found out that they was opening up an embassy here in D.C. from Cuba, the first thing I thought about was Sister Shakira. Is that how you pronounce her name?
Asada Shakur.
Right. So far away, but that's my sister, and I've been just thinking about her safety. So my question is, can anyone tell me, will she be okay down there? Because I know that they're constantly after her.
Dr. James,
good question.
Thank you very much, Sister Antoinette. Dr. James, would you like to field that question?
Yeah, well, first, congratulations about your daughter and your granddaughter and your family. I think I really appreciate your question because I think it helps concretize. And if I were to think of one concrete thing, which I don't even know how you would wage this campaign, I would say get her off the list. And for academics, I know academics who teach the book, but when it comes to signing a petition, they don't respond to the email, right? So an interesting campaign would be, and I'm not the only, I know there are people, there are a lot of progressive radical academics, so I'm not painting one picture, you know, for an entire, I'm going to call it an industry, for an entire industry. But a concrete campaign to challenge the FBI's right, given COINTELPRO, given its executions and assassinations in the past, given the fact of its files on people, its destabilization of liberation movements that were totally legal, meaning they operated within the law, even repressive law, right? They should recuse them. They shouldn't even be able to make this call. And to organize a push to pull her off the list, off the most wanted list. And in part, you have to deal with New Jersey and their influence, you know, in this. And so you're going to end up dealing with the police apparatus from the federal to the state to the local level. And I know people, actually, again, who live in New Jersey who say, you know, you can come in and talk about her, but I can't talk about her because I live there. So fear of being associated with Asada Shakur, publicly associated, not privately reading the memoir at home or assigning it to your class in the, quote, privacy of your classroom, but publicly associated in defense of Shakur and questioning the very legitimacy of the state. You know, tell them to give it to the UN. I don't even know how this works. I'm not a lawyer. But to delegitimize the very process that criminalizes her, I think would be the first dance by just demanding that she be taken off the list.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. James. We're going to take another call. Who do we have on the line with us this morning? Welcome to the Community Comment and Watch. What you thinking about?
Pardon me?
That's you.
That's you.
Okay. First of all, I donated last week, and I'm very proud to make a donation. But I would like to shift gears and say I'm a little concerned that WPFW is constantly asking people for money. And the one thing that really bothered me was that there was a woman from Berkeley on the air last week, and she was yelling at people, why aren't you supporting this station? I need $1,000 for this. I'm giving you this. I'm giving you that. I've given you $1,000. For I need three people with $1,000 to do this. Most people don't have $1,000. Most people don't have the kind of money to get those premiums. And this woman was guilt-tripping Major League to buy this. I don't understand how people can fundraise in that spirit. I also don't understand, it's kind of like the Uncle Billy syndrome, from It's a Wonderful Life. How many times do we have to bail out WPFW? How many benefits are there before you have enough money?
Yeah, that's you go ahead.
So you know it's a big deal when I come in.
I was going to say,
Dr. Hayes.
You messed up now.
No, this is Katia Stitt. Thank you, gentlemen, for allowing me to even step in the room. And normally I would not do it, but
if you heard the music, you would hear that Darth Hayter has just stepped into the building.
Everybody tightened up.
He's nothing like that. The girls are going to be scared. They're like, we thought Miss Katia was so nice. But I do want to address this caller because I have to say two things. One is that we tried to really be very clear that we were asking for donations during this last mini emergency fund drive because we fell short during the spring drive. I mean, we tried to be as transparent and as real as possible. That is what was going on. WPFW's bylaws, or Pacifica's bylaws, call for it to be member supported. There is a movement afoot, and I will be the first to say it. Maybe others have alluded to it, but I just want to be very clear. There is a movement afoot, and this is throughout Pacifica, not just the WPFW, to at least investigate and explore some sort of underwriting from those entities that are like-minded and synergistic with our mission. Not anyone else. Only those entities that are like-minded and synergistic with our mission. So if you're the Corrections Corporation of America or Lockheed Martin or any of those kinds of things, you're not going to get in the door. You're not even going to be thought about. But we realize here at Pacifica at the national level and the local level that we have to change the paradigm, the fundraising paradigm. We have to open up new streams of revenue. Or quite frankly, not only WPFW, but the Pacifica network will not survive. Lou Hill had a beautiful vision, a beautiful experiment, and it worked for many years. But we're in a landscape, a media landscape, where people simply have more and varied choices. Now, what I will say about that, which is what, again, we tried to make clear during last week, is that one thing that WPFW provides is really the breadth of perspectives on our air. And it really does come from the community, meaning those folks you know, or perhaps those you've seen, or those you've heard about, or those you've friended on Facebook or whatever, are actually the ones bringing content to the air. And they're spending many hours to do this. And they're doing it not so much out of a love of being on the air. I mean, I don't know about everyone, but I can say most people are really here because they feel like it's a community service to bring these kinds of issues to light or music that you wouldn't hear anywhere else to the air. And we look at it as a community service. We look at it as a privilege and an honor, but at the core, it's a community service and it goes out to the community. And when we say community, we mean just folks, whether you're listening on the internet halfway across the world or just here a few blocks away, those folks that, again, are like-minded and synergistic and understand the purpose and the mission of WPFW. So that's the fundraising piece. The second piece about the woman from Berkeley, and actually she's not from Berkeley, she's from LA. Her name is Margaret Prescott. And I will say that Margaret is an activist at heart. And like I've heard Amy Goodman at times, she can be very strident. But that is really because she is passionate about the subject matter, and she is passionate about keeping WPFW and Pacifica at large on the air. That is what that is. She's not hollering at anyone. I'm sure if you said that to her, she'd be probably startled. Or maybe she's heard that before. But I assure you, it is not out of any malice. It's not, she is not trying to browbeat anyone or to bully anyone. It is simply the way that she pitches. And we all have a different rhythm. You know, if you listen to Amy Goodman, she has a rhythm. Dr. Haight has a rhythm. Jared Ball has a rhythm. I have a rhythm. We're all different in the way we approach it. But the reality is that if we don't right now go to our member base and really the listeners and up the 8% that listen at this point without other revenue streams, we're not quite sure how long Pacifica will be here. Does that answer your question?
I think the caller's gone at this point.
Did I scare them away?
I mean,
no,
I do.
Not at all. Not at all. I don't think anybody's scared.
Okay.
I think you might have just choked them. Like Darth Haider would do.
I really hear your point. But I also heard in his point, if I'm representing it accurately, mm-hmm. that there can be that feeling of,
oh, absolutely.
We're all broke out here, and don't browbeat us.
Right.
But to your point, I mean, the station needs money,
and look,
people get fired up, and like you said, people have their own rhythm and style of calling for donations.
Right.
And speaking personally, not sure other hosts feel the same way. It's not always easy to do. It's
no,
not always comfortable to ask for money.
The other thing is, not only are the listeners tired, but guess what? Most of the programmers here are tired.
Yeah, no.
You know, we shudder to think that we have to come to you yet again and ask for money, which is why we're also, those of us that are in management or think we have a voice, and I do say think, we have a voice, are really calling for a paradigm shift in this fundraising. Because we understand that it is hard out there for everyone. And while we would love you to give money, the money, all the discretionary funds you have to WPFW, we understand you have other things to do and other things you want to do. And I think also being responsible calls for us to look at where we are now and say, all right, this has served us well for X number of years, but it is time to explore other avenues. And that is not to say to give up on the membership drives. Wouldn't it be lovely to have two a year?
Mm-hmm.
Because we had underwriting and we were engaged with those individuals and organizations that understood our vision and just wanted to help.
Right.
I see nothing wrong in that.
I fully agree with that.
And so if that alleviates some of what the caller was talking about, I, for one, am all for it, and I would think many of our members would even be all for it. And I certainly know our programmers would be.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we would be the first ones, as we were talking off air, we would be the first ones to be like, we're not having, you know, Walmart fund us.
Of course
not. We're
not
having Lockheed Martin fund us. So that's not the point. I hope people don't make that mistake either.
Right.
You know, we can't have Dr. Joy James on talking about Asada, right, and
exactly.
Like, we Fraternal Order Police just donated,
right.
You know, like, even if they would, we wouldn't, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it just wouldn't,
right.
Even, so Asada is still welcome here.
Yeah, that's
always,
right.
As is Mumia,
that's,
you know,
right.
As is any political prisoner, because Pacifica and WPFW understands, and we will never take dollars that compromise our message, our music, or anything about us, so please be very clear. Now, I'm going to turn it back over to these gentlemen, but I heard the comment, and I just had to run in.
We have 4,000 people on the line right now, and they're all talking to you.
No.
So you have
you got
to stay
it, Dr. Haight.
Yes, thank you very much. That is, I couldn't figure out if it was Darth Haider or Princess Haider.
Right.
But I think Darth Haider did it. You know, we just don't have the music queued up yet. All right.
Funny.
Callers, welcome to Community Watching Comment. What's your comment or question?
Doctors.
What's good?
Yes, sir.
Hey, look, I'm hating on Donald Stupid. The hats he wins. Make America great again. I want y'all doctors to explain that to me, because I had an epiphany about making America great again. I don't remember America being great, but okay, y'all can help me with this. I had a nightmare when I see him wearing those hats. It was white, make America great again. Then it was red, make America great again. I don't know what color he gonna use the next time. Number two, they have a video out showing people how to defend themselves when the crazy is going to movies shooting up places. Okay? And they showing them how the federal government has funded a video how to defend yourself when the crazy come in the movie shooting up the movie. Now, what we need to do is we need to have a video says the fascists think that they gonna control our women and that they gonna quiet our women. We need a video on how our women need to defend themselves, because when he reached in that car with Sister Bland, she should have maced him, then she should have tased him, and then she should have called for help. Help me, please, because this is what I'm teaching my sisters and my grandchildren, my granddaughters and my daughters, how to defend themselves against those fascists. What we need is a video on how our sisters need to be able to defend themselves. Since people are running around here talking about we can't defend our sisters, we're going to teach them how to defend themselves. Help me, please, because I had an epiphany and I need y'all help. You know?
I want to open that up to Dr. James. Dr. James, are you still with us?
I'm still with you. You know, the issue of self-defense, that's a tricky one, because, you know, so you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And if you don't defend yourself, you can end up dead. If you do defend yourself, yeah, most definitely, I would imagine it would. The response would be that they use deadly justified force. So you guys are going to have to tell, because this actually, I think this is the third rail of academic politics and movement politics, the right to self-defense. And people, you know, my hesitancy, right, because I'm trying to figure out how to articulate this. Of course you have the right to self-defense, and you have a constitutional right, you know, look at the Constitution. But here's the issue. The rights of blacks to self-defense has been historically stymied and prohibited. So the issue of collective punishment comes up, right? When you've had those moments, those historical moments when, you know, a black person has defended themselves and their family, it could be male or female, and the mob response, and as Ida B. Wells noted, the mob can include the judge and the local sheriff, right? The mob response is collective punishment. It, you know, back to Ida B. Wells. And again, I'm going to say back to black maternal politics. You know, so Ida B. Wells is the godmother of a 2-year-old girl whose father, Thomas Moss, has an independent black business, right, a grocery store. And they're having a political meeting, a business meeting in a store, the African-American men who formed this cooperative, this business, in competition with the local white grocer. Unidentified white men who are armed come through the alley at night. They don't know who they are. They don't declare themselves, right, as police, as sheriffs, whatever. There's a gun battle that ensues. They shoot and injure or shoot and kill several of the white men who turn out to be law enforcement. They realize what happens. They go in to turn themselves in to the proper authorities. They end up being lynched. So the question for me becomes, what is the firewall for black people who defend themselves? Meaning, how much of the black community or communities in plural are willing to mobilize to protect those who make those choices? Because if we look at, you know, we connect the dots of the discussion we've been having this morning. If we look at the Panthers, if we look at the BLA, I mean, it was the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, I believe, was the original title, right? One of the original titles. So the right to self-defense was placed front and center, and that right, I believe, has been sidetracked by other issues, which are important issues like stop police brutality, stop police criminality, right? But you're still dodging the question, like, what happens if the state does not or will not stop? I mean, even Obama in his press statement following Baltimore, the rebellion riots in Baltimore, He says, I cannot federalize the police, which means that basically this is why you don't have good stats on how many civilians, I'm going to use the military terminology police do, how many civilians are killed by police, because the police departments don't really have to report that information, right? So when the president says, I can't federalize them, what he's actually saying, I can't control them. So if you're going to mount self-defense against police violence and police brutality, what is your firewall from the rest of the community or other communities at large? And this is a central issue that we have to grapple with. I believe if Sarah Bland, this is only my belief, had maced him, that he would have shot her. So... What is your reason? You know, yeah, there's even, you know, the Black Women's Blueprint, right? They're having a tribunal in April of 2016 at the UN on rape against black women. They're starting from the 1946 or 47 Recy Taylor. This is how Rosa Parks started, right? Collecting the testimonies of black women who've been raped by white men. And then her network that she built, right? That became the network when Martin Luther King was invited to lead a movement that was growing, you know, in Alabama. That became the movement list that everybody went to, right? But for the Black Women's Blueprint, what they're doing today, they're looking at white police who rape black women and who are not held accountable. So the right to self-defense against rape, the right to self-defense against harassment, the right to self-defense against verbal abuse. These are rights that you have in civil society, ostensibly in a theory, right, against other civilians. These are not de facto rights that you have against the police. So the leaders of Blacks in Law Enforcement in America, who are based in Westchester, I think it's Damon Jones, I mentioned at a forum where Sharon Salam and Yusuf Salam were speaking from the Central Park case, right? He had mentioned that we need to think not just about police brutality, we have to think about police criminality and then police accountability. So who controls the police? If the president tells you he doesn't, then the issue will be, does the community control the police? And if it does, can it guarantee protections for those who invoke their right to self-defense against police abuse?
That's Dr. Joy James. We want to thank you very much, Dr. James. You know, what's interesting, somebody pointed out that the offense took place near the campus of Prairie View A&M. This is a historically black college and university, and we have this most recent, I can't say most recent, but a recent police shooting where a University of Cincinnati police officer shoots another motorist. And, you know, we're seeing these university levels. When you talk about academe, it's not just, you know, the academe and the academics inside, but it's also the policing of academe, figuratively and literally.
You know, if I could just say real quick, there was one important, I forgot to mention this in the last hour, but there was one important piece that was, I think, different from, and this part I don't even mean necessarily as hate, though it may sound like it, and may in fact be. But there was an important difference between the interviews we did with Iris Rowley from Cincinnati's Black United Front and the one Amy Goodman did this morning. And ours that we did a couple of days ago, imixwhatilike.org, people can watch it, or the Real News Network, they can watch it. I raised this question that the prosecutor in Cincinnati said, you know, he was very aggressive in saying, DJ RBI just walked in. This is how we do around here. That's the legends just come in the building in the middle of, you know. But the prosecutor was making the point that he was so aggressive in saying that Tensing was a murderer. He said we're treating him like a murderer, and I've never seen anything like this, and he's a, you know, this, that, and a third. But he made the point of distinguishing between the poor police work of this University of Cincinnati cop and the good cops in the Cincinnati PD. Mm-hmm. that the cops in general are good. It was only the poorly trained university cop that was bad. And that's why he was so aggressive. He would not have been that aggressive had it been a Cincinnati police officer, given what we all know is the relationship that police departments have with prosecutors, et cetera. The university campus police don't have that same relationship with the prosecutor. So he could be that aggressive. And that was one point that I think is being lost in the coverage and the discussion of how aggressive he has been, sounding at least in this incident. And I think a lot of people, even on the left, are missing that important point. Distinction.
And if we can jump back to the phone lines and get a couple of more callers in, we got a few on the line. Caller, what's your comment or question? You're on with Dr. Hate, Dr. Ball, Dr. James, and RBI, none other than the legendary DJ himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome.
Hey, thank you, brother. Hey, I got a question. I would just add in to the other caller's question. How much does WPFW pay for that space? What's the rent amount? And I think that's probably a part of the problem. Was I was reminded a couple months ago the fact that they took that space, but it's probably a whole lot of other cheaper spaces they could have taken, especially in terms of in the communities, not the commercial districts of D.C., but in a community where the people were supposed to be represented. It was told to me kind of like that by one brother. And I think that's an important piece, because if you don't have that much rent overhead, you can do a lot more. You won't have to have these extra drives where people can even perceive to be battered into paying or donating more. I think that's just one thing. But I think it also deals with Cuba. The United States has been renting Guantanamo Bay from Cuba for $4,085 a year. Now, we know that's an aggression or some kind of treaty that was made. But man, that's a model to look at. You know, WPFW needs to go ahead and see if they can confiscate some land from these corporations if they want to deal with them in this manner. And the thing that shocked me that I just learned about Cuba is that Cuba never has accepted that $4,085 a year. I just learned that. Y'all probably knew that. And that's amazing to me. That might help the other sister and her question about, is Asada safe? If that will speak to anything about what Cuba is going to do to protect Asada, the fact that they're standing even against the fact that they, you know, Americans occupy the Guantanamo Bay, they're still not taking the money. It's not about money with Cuba, it would appear. I don't know how fair that could be. I guess there's some changes going on in Cuba. We'll see. And then lastly, self-defense is just natural common sense. It's just a matter of which black people have been put down so bad that they're even afraid to defend themselves violently, because we've been sold this non-violent rhetoric over the years that has caused us to be so distorted in our thinking. You know, and I think that's an important piece to remember too, because out in the Bundy Ranch, when the feds came to take over that Bundy Ranch, clearly the police got outmanned or outgunned and outpositioned. Military strategy, military tactics were used, you know, with snipers up there in the Bundy Ranch. So just keep that in mind. It's a serious time. I appreciate y'all, man. One show I hope never goes off the air is this show, and I mix what I like.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Important comments and questions. We got two more callers if we can.
Make a quick point of clarity here. The rent here is cheaper than it was at the Champlain Street location. And this building was already retrofitted and outfitted for the work we're doing here. So it actually saved money. So I think that part, I think, might need to be cleaned up a little bit. Misunderstood, right. Yeah.
And it's a better space.
Thank you very much.
It is a better space.
Caller, what's your comment or question?
Oh, great. You have an excellent show. My friends always encouraged me to listen today. They told me to listen. I had to put it on my computer very quickly. Yes, you have superb information for the black community, for everyone, all ethnic groups, but especially for the black community. And you mostly advertise and promote that information during your fund drive, which is completely unjust and unfair. You had a large community, Southeast. PFW is golden. People don't realize the power, the authenticity, and the availability, the accessibility that this radio program offers the entire vicinity. It's global, through the Internet. We are blessed to have access to even brothers like Dr. Hate, Dr. Joy. These people that come on constantly. I mean, there are only two real radio shows left to me, this whole region that black people can really participate and grow from. I'm not going to say the other one, I'm on the air. But I will say you have a way, a method of operating that is not conducive to the people that you're trying to serve in terms of raising money. You have access to so much information in your library. You could just have gone over to Southeast to those schools and on the weekends had programs and had the information of Marcus Garvey and some of these great blacks of today, Tony Martin, everybody, Dr. Francis Bress Welsing, just phrases or one whole poem or a book on the covers on T-shirts and selling them. You could keep that money and upscale that radio station like crazy where you could probably start to pay for things that normally you wouldn't be able to pay for.
Well, thank you very much for the suggestions and the good feedback. We appreciate that. And we'll continue to do the good work and incorporate your feedback. We got one more caller on the line. What's your comment or question? We heard about Cuba's embassy opening. Is one call I'm looking forward to. Caller, what's your comment or question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you met this is a real hater here today.
I'm looking forward to the good hate, please.
Yeah, the job of the African lion is to defend the pride
and stay away from dentists.
So I am appealing to all the lions of Africa to defend their pride. It don't matter who the enemy is. And then second, I am calling about the trip, Obama's trip to Africa.
Yes.
He was very disrespectful to the elders of Africa. There are three things that we don't want to repeat in Africa. One is homosexuality. Homosexuality is murder. And second, woman suffrage is murder. And third, abortion is murder. About 3 billion people dead in transatlantic slavery. We want to revive the population of Africa. So Obama to go to Africa to tell Africa that we don't have democracy. The term democracy he's talking about started in Africa. We have democracy. We just need to put our house in order.
All right. Thank you very much. So that is our last caller for the morning. And this is Dr. Hate On with Dr. Ball. RBI is in the building. Dr. Ball, please.
I just want to say thanks again to Dr. James, man. You know, I really appreciate.
Yeah. Can I say something real quick?
Please.
Okay, great. So, yes, we need everybody desires the same thing, freedom. But we also need to remember the vulnerability and the strengths of black females. And so when you think of the reports, right, about the girls or women kidnapped by the Boko Haram or other groups, right, about incest and rape and forced pregnancies, I will not agree, right, that even as tragic as abortions are, that they have to be banned unless you ban violence against women and girls, right? And also sexual violence, again, against boys and men. So it's a complicated issue, but the right of female autonomy is a precondition for black liberation.
I can agree with that.
I can agree with that, too.
No qualms there.
Enough said.
So, Dr. James, if you could continue this conversation for part 2.5.
Okay.
Which direction should we go? Because we're going to post all of the links that you have sent for us to read on imixwhatilike.org so that folks can follow up with your work, catch up to it, refresh themselves, get acquainted with it so that we're more prepared next time we get on the line with you for our community audience. What direction do you want to go in next time?
Okay, well, by next time you mean the next time we have a call, a meetup?
Like this afternoon, we're gonna call you right back and be back on the air. But the next time, give it a week.
The next time you're on with us, whenever.
Okay, because the Law for Black Lives conference is actually going on right now in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned they showed Concerning the Violence, the new documentary on Frantz Fanon and decolonization last night. People may want to take a look at that. I think the work you guys are doing is amazing, and I would very much value our continued conversations.
Oh, what's going to happen?
And any direction that you think is helpful is the direction I'm happy to talk about.
All right. Thank you very much, yes, Dr. James. It's been a pleasure having you on with us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out because I got a lot of food for thought on the way over, driving from Southeast. You know, so yeah, y'all got to do this again.
Yeah, we appreciate that. That is the main, DJ RBI. That's you, a bad dude, man. I've been seeing what you've been up to too, man. This is a bad man right here.
Thank you, bro.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
The best to you and your family.
Likewise, thank you very much.
Same to you.
Yeah.
All right, this is Dr. Haight. You know, as we say, tuning this show out. Be time in ourselves, but right now time is out. We want to thank you for calling in this week. I'm looking forward to somebody giving us an analysis of this latest research that says the only human race that exists is the African race, and that every other group between European Americans and Asians are descended from Neanderthals. The Fred Flintstone theory is on. That's why you saw no black people on the Flintstones, because it was only for Neanderthals. Africans was doing something different. We wasn't working in bedrock.
Wow.
But if you want to rubble with us, you know where we be at. All right, y'all. Red Eagle, thank you very much. It's Dr. Haight signing out. We'll catch y'all in the whirlwind. Don't let that whirlwind catch you.